Today is Thursday, December the 21st, 2017. We're going to hear Moshe Soloveitchik Shir and Parshas Vayigash and the Fast of Teveth.
First of all, it's so nice to see all of you here. In case you don't know, we're Milchik. If you'd be so kind as to take your phones and put them on work, silence them, please. I'd really appreciate it. And so would Reb Moshe.
Where's my...
I should take them with Felicia.
Yeah. Hold that meat. So, anyway, there will be a class next week, just in case you want to know. I would like to thank
God afterwards.
For the people who will dive in Myra before
there's a class next week.
Before they come, yeah.
And we'll probably be fleshing. I would like to thank Young Israel and especially Rabbi Berger for being so kind to us, allowing us to have this class here. It really is appreciated. I just need to say that. For those who helped me this evening, I want to thank them, whoever they may be, and I really appreciate the help, schlepping in the food and doing whatever they do, whatever help they do. Also, the generosity of a few of you is really wonderful and appreciated by everybody. We had somebody bring in large plates and cups, and I think last week we may have had some plasticware. All I can say is thank you very much for being so generous and kind. And we really do appreciate it. I'd like to dedicate the class tonight for two reasons. One is that one of our class members here is going to be 29 again. That's Stephanie. Stephanie, happy birthday. And I hope you enjoy your 29th birthday. And the other reason is Mark Oberlander's wife is ill, and I'd like to wish her for Shlema. Her name is
Rachel Bat Rezel.
Yeah, Rachel Bat Rezel, and she should have a refuah Shlema. And I'm going to dedicate the class also for that purpose. And we're going to daven Marav. We're going to need pretty much everybody's help, for davening tonight. Some people won't be able to stay. And I just want to wish everybody today a good Erev Shabbos and a good Shabbos coming up. And it's a pleasure to see all of you here. The motion?
Yeah. All right, this week is Asara B'Teves. Thursday is Asara B'Teves. I assume most people will be breaking their fast before they get here to the class. But I want to speak about Asara B'Teves. Now, we have four fast days that commemorate the Churban, that commemorate the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The 10th of Teves, that's identified with, according to Rabbi Akiva anyway, that's identified with the Babylonian army encircling Yerushalayim, laying siege to Yerushalayim. Then we have Shavasa B'Tamas. That's when it's when the Roman army entered Yerushalayim there's some question what date the Babylonians penetrated the walls of Yerushalayim. There are those who say that it was, I think, on the 9th of Tammuz. But this commemorates the enemy, whoever the enemy is, entering Yerushalayim. And then we have, of course, Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is the day of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the day the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And then we have Tzon Gedalia. Gedalia was the governor that was appointed by the Babylonians, a Jewish governor, and there was some degree of Jewish rule in Eretz Yisrael even after the Churban, but he was assassinated, and then as a result of his assassination, not only did the Jews lose complete control of Eretz Yisrael, but many people were killed, and it was a great catastrophe. Now, we know Asar B'Teves is unique, according to the calendar, in that it never falls out on Shabbos. But, on the other hand, it's the only fast day that falls out on Friday. There are poskim, since this year it doesn't fall out on Friday, so I'm not scared to mention what some poskim say. There are some poskim that say that after you go, that the Rabbi Yitzchak, he was one of the Balei HaTosfos, before he would go to shul, he would break his fast while it was still day, because he didn't want to accept Shabbos while he was fasting. And the sheet of the Maharam Rutenberg was that if you accept Shabbos early, you can break your fast also. I'm sure people knew that. They would have early minyan on Friday during the winter. Anyway, however, we paskin that you have to fast till Teisa Kochavim, and obviously you can't eat before Kiddush, so you have to daven Ma'ariv. So it's much longer. Okay, well, I'm just mentioning the Shitas, but the Avudram, the opinion of Avudram, is something unusual. The question is, everything that I just mentioned was once the calendar was instituted. But before the calendar was instituted, the declaration of the new month was based on the sighting of the moon. And since it was based on the sighting of the moon, Asar B'Teves was able to fall out on Shabbos itself. So the question is, what happens if Asar B'Teves falls out on Shabbos? Logic would say, hey, Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, we postpone the fast day to Sunday. If Shavuos B'Tammuz, usually that's the same year anyway, it's the same thing that year, Shavuos B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av always fall out on the same day of the week. So we postpone it to Sunday. Tzon Gedalia, Tzon Gedalia is an interesting discussion. There are those that say that Tzon Gedalia is always the postponed fast, because there are those who believe that Gedalia was killed on Rosh Hashanah. And there are opinions, you know, postponed fast days have certain leniencies that other fast days don't have. So there are those who say that Tzon Gedalia always has those leniencies. All right, but from the Rambam it appears that it's explicit in the Rambam. His opinion was that the day of the fast day is the third of Tammuz, and a third of Tishrei. And not only that, he says explicitly that Gedalia was killed on the third of Tishrei, not in Rosh Hashanah, but on the third of Tishrei. But whatever the case is, if Tzon Gedalia falls out on Shabbos, again, it's postponed to Sunday. So logic would dictate, if Asar B'Teves should fall out on the Shabbos before they had the calendar. So it would also be postponed to Sunday. The Avudrim says not that way. The Avudrim says that if it should fall out on Shabbos, on Asara B'Teves, you have to fast on Shabbos. Because in Yecheskel it says, Ki be'etzem hayom hazeh, on the essence of that day, and the expression, Ki be'etzem hayom hazeh, the essence of the day, is mentioned in regard to Yom Kippur. And we know that Yom Kippur, if it falls out in Shabbos, we fast. So Asara B'Teves, if it falls out in Shabbos, we also fast. Now what's, so Reb Chaim, just a parenthetical remark, Reb Chaim explained it on a halachic basis. I'm going to try to explain it on a hashgafa basis. Because the Navi Scharya, when he talks about the fast days, he says, Somer Revi, the fast of the fourth month, the fast of the fourth month, that's Shavas B'Tammuz. Tammuz is the fourth month, counting from Nisan. Som HaChamishi, that's Tisha B'Av. Som Hashvi, that's Som Gedalia. And Som HaSir is Asar B'Teves, because Teves is the tenth month, counting. So the Navi only mentions, the month of the fast days. So Reb Chaim said, the Navi only instituted which month the fast day is in. He did not institute for generations which day of the month it has to be. So, but the Navi left that up for future generations to decide. So because of that, he says, so that's why if it falls out in Shabbos, you postpone it because to Sunday, because the Sunday afterwards is always within the month, so it's not a problem. And the later Beis Din or whatever, the Beis Din decided that when it doesn't fall out in Shabbos, this is the day of the month that you fast, and when it falls out in Shabbos, since it's the same month, it's not a problem. They were allowed to institute a different day for the fast day. However, since the Navi, I think it's in the Yecheskel, says, Ki be'etzem hayom hazeh, in regard to Asar B'Teves, that they surrounded Yerushalayim be'etzem hayom hazeh. So here, the day is identified with the fast. Consequently, if it falls out in Shabbos, it has to be on that day. That's how Reb Chaim explained it. Okay. I want to understand hashgafa-wise. We all know, if you ask what people consider the most stringent fast day, so Yom Kippur, hands down, and then you'll ask them, what's the second most stringent fast day? So say Tisha B'Av. And the third will be Shavas B'Tammuz. And fourth and fifth, I don't know, either they'll say Asar B'Teves or Tzom Gedali. So, at least from the perspective of public perception, Asar B'Teves is considered more lenient than the other fast days. So the question is, why, according to the Avudrim, and I should point out that it's clear that the Rambam disagreed with the Avudrim. It seems even the Shulchan Aruch, who really didn't have to deal with that problem because we have the calendar today, disagrees with the Avudrim. There are those who say, I don't think it's Harai Mechrachas, but there are those who bring proof that Rashi felt not like the Avudrim also. But the facts remains, there is that Shita, that Asara B'Teves, if it falls out on Shabbos, you have to fast on Shabbos. And the question is, why should you have to fast on Shabbos? Now, these four fast days, which are associated with remembering the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, can be viewed from two perspectives. On one hand, it's mourning. We're mourning over the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, not in the same way that we mourn on Tisha B'Av, only fasting, only, you're only not allowed to eat, but the fasting is a form of mourning also. A matter of fact, there is an opinion, the opinion of the Ramban is that all the four fast days, and at the time when the Jewish people have decrees against them, you have to fast all the four fast days like Tisha B'Av, 24 hours, and it all has to be like Tisha B'Av, according to Ramban. It always amazed me that during World War II, no one, there are Rishonim that disagree, from the Rambam it appears that he disagrees, but it always amazed me that during World War II, no one suggested that perhaps because of the situation that, listen, I'm not trying to make people's fast days longer, but, you know, if there was ever a time there were decrees against the Jewish people while we were in exile, it was during World War II. Okay. But in any case, so one perspective of the fast days is mourning. We mourn the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. But there is another aspect, and that is tzaka. We're crying out to God for help. In a sense, that's what the whole slichus, we say slichus on the fast days. By Tisha B'Av, it seems that it was divided. The mourning is mourning, and the afternoon, when we say Hashem, Hashem, kel rachem v'chanun, the laning there, it's tzaka, it's crying out to God. But to a certain degree, both fast days commemorate both, are identified as days of once, in a sense, mourning the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. On the other hand, it's also crying out to God, asking God to help us now that we find ourselves in these troubled situations of exile. So, the question, so now, from the point of view of mourning, I would say the fast day that represents mourning the most is Tisha B'Av. It's Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, more than any other fast day, is identified with mourning. However, when it comes to tzaka, to crying out to God, when it comes to tzaka, so if I was to pick a fast day, I would say it's Asara B'Teves. Why is it Asara B'Teves? It's Asara B'Teves because you cry for somebody who is sick. You don't say, people do say Tehillim, but the time to say Tehillim is when a person becomes sick, at the beginning when he becomes sick. You don't say the Tehillim, you don't make the Mishaberech, even though I know a couple of people that say Mishaberech is someone who might have passed away already, but not going into any names. But you don't make Mishaberech, you don't pray for a recovery for someone after he passed away. You don't. So what the idea is, I think our sages, the Nevi'im, who instituted these fast days, they wanted to point something out. And I think this is a problem that we in the Jewish community, not just now, but I think throughout our generations had. We wait. We don't nip it in the bud. The Torah tells us, Vayomas Melech Mitzrayim in Parsha Shemos, Vayonchu v'nei Yisrael min avoda, the Jewish people, they couldn't bear the enslavement. But Tal Shavasim Elokim. So Rashi already asked, so their cries, they moaned, and their moaning and their crying went up to God. And Rashi asked the question, the king of Egypt dies, the Jews can't bear it anymore. They cry, and the cry goes to God. It was over a hundred years beforehand. What happened? Only at this point, the Jews are crying out to God. What about beforehand? What about when they had to take when they had to their children were being thrown into the Nile? They didn't cry out to God. Only when the enemy died. Okay, this situation, they still remain slaves. But under those circumstances, they could take some, you know, I wouldn't use the word pleasure, but they could take some, the one who enslaved us and all that, he's dead. So the question is, why only at that point? So Rashi says that the king of Egypt didn't die, he was sick, and they needed the blood of Jews, whatever, a whole to do. But I think lefi pshuto, we could explain it differently. I think lefi pshuto, in the simple manner, we could explain it, that the Jewish people always turn to God at the last moment. At the last moment. Why? The Jewish people remembered their days in Egypt when Yosef was alive. And when Yosef was alive, Yosef was the viceroy of Egypt, the assistant to the king of Egypt, almost to the point where Yosef actually thought that he considered himself the ruler of Egypt to a certain degree. And the Jewish people remembered those days. So they attributed it. They said, what is it? What is it that causes the problem? One person, a Yakamelech Chadash HaMitzrayim, a new king came upon Egypt. But once this one person will be gone, then everything will be okay. And we will be restored to our seed of glory. They saw light at the end of the tunnel. And the unfortunate thing is that when we see light at the end of the tunnel, we don't turn to God. So that's it. Vayomas Melech Mitzrayim, when the king of Egypt died. And and their situation didn't change. So then they realized. So then, as a last resort, when there was no more hope of it happening by itself, Batal Shavasim Elokim. Again, as I've mentioned in the past, just a few weeks ago, it doesn't mean that a person isn't supposed to try. You have to try your best, whatever it is, but whatever you're trying has to come combined together with turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the problem is, don't save that for last. Don't think the situation is going to cure itself. Time cures all problems, it doesn't. And it certainly, tefillah is very, very important, and it's very important not that just when there is no hope left. In other words, there are no atheists in foxholes. But we shouldn't have to be in the foxhole when there's no other choice to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I think when it comes to crying out to God, when it comes to tzaaka, when it comes to asking for heavenly assistance, you really can't postpone, because you don't know whether tomorrow you'll be able to do it. I once there was the head of Mussar Rav Kook was a man by the name of Yitzhak Rafael. I remember he was a political leader in the Mizrahi, but he published the Svarim of Rabbi Yechiel Weinberg. Rabbi Yechiel Weinberg was probably the post-war the Gadol of Europe. Just to give you an example, in Slabodka, the altar of Slabodka considered him to be the outstanding student in Slabodka. And the members of his group, he was the head of the group, included people like Rabaron Cutler, and so just to give you an idea, obviously the war had a certain effect upon him. He later on went to Berlin. There was all kinds of issues, but he went to Berlin and this. But then after the war, he was a completely broken man. He didn't have any family, and so he went to Switzerland. I assume there was a book that came out about his life. I didn't read it. I assume Switzerland, for some reason, Jews believe in Switzerland you get cured from everything. Everybody that got sick would go to Switzerland for medical attention. But anyway, he went to Switzerland. He apparently had a student there. And at the end of his life, Moshe Rav Kook decided they're going to publish his Svarim. When I was a young boy, I was very interested in these things, and I read an interview that Yitzhak Rafael, who was the head of Mossad Rav Kook, which was the printing house for Hebrew books and Svarim, so he sent one of the volumes of Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, Shridei, he sent him one of the volumes. He sent it special delivery, air post, everything. In those days, these type of things you would send by boat, I don't know, whatever it is, but he sent it. And they asked him, why did you send it the regular way? He said, with an old man, you never know. You never know. And to some degree, we're all old men. So, and the truth was that Rabbi Yechiel Weinberg, he according to the interview, he saw the Sefer before he died. It gave him a certain degree of happiness because he was not a person that had any relatives or anything. It gave him happiness, and he died shortly afterwards. In other words, the idea is we can't postpone. When it comes to mitzvahs, we say Zrizin Makdimin le mitzvahs. But certainly when it comes to danger, we don't say, well, the situation will take care of itself. And this is a problem that we suffer from, that throughout our history, I think this approach is something that... So I think that's the reason why Asar B'Teves can't be postponed. Because Asar B'Teves, more than any of the other fast days, represents the idea, because when is the best time for crying out? At the very beginning. As the problems increase, as we have to nip it in the bud, we have to seize the moment. We have to seize the moment. And the Asar B'Teves is represents the idea of seizing the moment. You can't postpone. And to emphasize that to the Jewish people, they said Asar B'Teves can't be postponed. No, it's the other fast days. They don't so much represent Sa'akah, crying out to God, like Asar B'Teves. And when it comes to Avelis, mourning can sometimes be postponed. But you don't know what is going to happen later. So you can't postpone it. Now, And matter of fact, in this week's Sedra, you see that, in other words, you have to, in a sense, anticipate beforehand the problems that will arise, and don't wait till after the problems become greater. You see, Yaakov, when he went down to Egypt, so he was Yehuda Shalach Lefanav. He sent Yehuda beforehand. Chazal tell us, our sages tell us why. So they use the word to make a base medrash or whatever it is, yeshiva, people to learn. It's more than that. I think it's the idea to prepare because they knew. And this, to a certain degree, this was the problem. My uncle explained it very nicely, that what was the fight between Yosef and his brothers? The fight between Yosef and his brothers was that Yosef thought that he realized that situations are going to change, and he was prepared for it. The brothers, they were threatened, my uncle said, by the dream of we're in the fields. They were shepherds. So Yosef talked about a changing situation. They were scared that if the situation changes, they felt secure where they were in their regular situation. But a changing situation, they thought, would threaten their commitment or their children's commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Yosef said, we have to be prepared for it. We have to prepare beforehand for it. Not wait till afterwards. And at that point, when they realized that Yosef was right, Yehuda Shalach Lefanav, to prepare the way because of the problems that they're going to, the problems that they're going to encounter. You know, there is a story about Chalem. Chalem was a town that in Jewish folklore, I said, the people were not known for being the world's sharpest people. That's my guess, my way of putting it. I hope no one hears from Chalem. Anyway, so I asked my father. I actually asked my father, is it true or is it just something that somebody made up? So my father says there was some truth to it. And he said the Russian government once opened up a railroad train track between Chalem and Brisk. He said, and they offered a free ride, the first ride, a free ride. And all the people from Chalem, this is a story my father told me, all the people from Chalem got on the train. It was a free ride. It wasn't a round trip, though. they went to Brisk, and they were stuck there. As Reb Chaim had to raise money to send them back, it was probably his easiest fundraising campaign that he had. But anyway, that was the example that my father gave me. The comment at the end was my own, not my father's. Anyway, so there's a story about Chalem that the bridge in Chalem broke. And you know what happens? Some people are falling through, people were getting injured, and all kinds of things. They fell in after it broke, not the Shas Maisa. Okay, so the bridge broke, and people were falling through, and the wise men of Chalem, okay. You can call it that. The wise men of Chalem called a meeting to what to do about the problem. So they decided that they're going to raise the allocation to the hospital because of all the people that were getting injured by the bridge, by the hole in the bridge. I think our community, and I'm not talking just about Chicago, I think our community is like Chelem. I hate to say this. Now there are all kinds of programs. What do they call it for children who falling off the path, not off the bridge?
At risk.
I mean, at risk means after the risk. In other words, we deal with the problem after the problem takes place. We don't do anything to prevent the problem. We don't recognize what the problems are. The nature of society is such that some children need counseling, what it is. And there is some like this, that'll take care of itself. And by the time you recognize that it's not taking care of itself, it's giving money to the hospital. What's the idea? The idea is that you have to be on guard at the very beginning, even before the beginning. That's right. That's, you got to fix the bridge. It's not enough to give. Of course, you have to take care of, you have to fix the hospital also. Raise the allocation to the hospital. But we look forward to when we won't need hospitals. I think this is the idea of Asara B'Teves. The idea of Asara B'Teves is that the idea of Asara B'Teves is that we have to recognize the problem and we have to seize the moment, not to wait till the problem gets greater and greater. And I want to point out, after the peace treaty or whatever it was that Carter made, I forgot what it was called already.
Camp David.
After the Camp David Accords, and I was happy, and everybody else was happy. And everything. And then, all of a sudden, time after time after time again, another bomb goes off in a bus, another bomb goes off in the bus. And everybody knew where it's going, why it was taking place. And we know the peace treaties, the peace treaties that took place, the peace treaty said that if there's terrorism, the terrorists have to be given over to Israel. Of course, that was never followed through. And what did we do? We waited, because that's what the United States wanted Israel to do, to wait. Things will get better. And more people were killed. Give peace a chance. I'm in favor, by the way. I would be in favor of giving territory back. I'm not from the Merkez Harav. I'm against giving territory back because I know once they get all the territory back, they'll kill us more. Call more. But if we could get peace, but they demonstrated that they'll lie, they'll cheat, and they're not going to. It was time and time again. And what do? They want us to postpone it. Now, I've discussed this before. Just postpone it.
Same with the embassy.
Just postpone it. Postpone it. How many years? How many years do we have to postpone it? In other words, they don't want us to seize the moment. And believe me, when they have the chance, they will seize the moment. And the world doesn't condemn them. And who does the world condemn? The world condemns the Jews. I met time and time again. I used to mention that when Israel, when the terrorists do acts of terrorism in Israel, what did the Vatican say? The Vatican said they hope that the cycle of violence will not continue. Let me explain that in English. I hope that Israel will sit down and let the terrorists do what they want. And then when Arafat, Yimach Shemo, would make statements in English saying one thing, in Arabic saying another thing. Oh, you have to understand Arafat. You have to become his psychologist, you know. You have to understand what he's up against. And he has to lie, and we have to allow him to lie to us. And we have to play along with his lies. And even editors of the Jewish newspapers, they would condemn Netanyahu, and they would praise Arafat.
He still does. That's right.
So they would praise Arafat. I mean, if there was a Hitler in this generation, it was Arafat. And what do they do with that? They say, just got to give it more time. And the answer is, no, we can't give it more time. We postponed too much already. And when the world condemns Israel, they're not going to condemn Israel for... they're not going to openly condemn Israel for trying to survive. They'll condemn Israel for not giving it more time, for not postponing. And we just can't. We can't rely on the nations of the world. Baruch Hashem, now the HaKadosh Baruch Hu manipulated that there should be a president who is, but it's still Al Tiftachu Min Adivim. That's right now. Hopefully, it'll continue, but we have to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in prayer. And we can't postpone. We have to recognize the danger when it takes place and not postpone.
selfie. And the one on the other end says, "That's what my husband Albert does when I tell him I have a headache."
enough for Israel. 35 on the Stars power play. Klingberg carries to his blue line, flips the puck back down between the circles in the Dallas end. Descetto, who carries to center ice, moves it down to the left wing corner hot zone. The puck pops out to fourth wing, brings it over to the right board to Cage. He had it knocked off his stick to the line, kept in by Klingberg left point. To Radulov along the right wing half board. The Klingberg high slot to the top of the right circle. Descetto fires one of the hands to second and sixth and third. It's a power play goal. 3-0 Dallas Stars. Big in it, John. 8 games without a goal. This is a broken play. Connor Murphy blocks it. It trickles in to Tyler Seguin. He picks it up. Troy Crawford has already committed to the shot coming in. Tough for him to regroup and push over to his right on this play. Tyler Seguin just does a little deep to the backhand. Cuts it into the wide open net. That's not down 3-0. Another Seguin ties Jamie Benn in goals and power play goals with that one. 15 on the season, 6 on the power play. Dallas 1-for-2 on their man advantage. The Blackhawks didn't get the job done in the old Second Bank Blackhawks penalty kill. So 3-0 Dallas. Detail with Klein for the Hawks. Kind of the understatement of the night. And behind the Stars net, Hawks had the puck.
Call Sharon Goldenberg.
Calling Sharon Goldenberg.
I'll be home in about 2 minutes.
Okay, I got the computer on.
All right, the Blackhawks are losing 3-0.
Okay.
Bye. Bye. Love you.
Far corner, I believe that's Antoine Roussel, and the linesman will step in. 3-0 Dallas with 13:05 left in the second here at period here in Big D. This is Blackhawks Hockey on 720 WGN.
It's always important to hear our members say, I'm doing well, but it's inspirational to hear them say, I'm doing good. I'm Maurice Smith, president of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois, and for over 80 years, we've been inspired by all the good our members and employees have been doing for our community. And being right here in Illinois, we see it every day with our volunteers, supporting nutritional programs, encouraging physical activity, and building safe areas. They will always have our support in their efforts to promote the health and wellness of their communities, because it's our community too. Doing well and doing good is takes the hard work of many. All of us at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois, thank you. Because we know when you're doing good, it will lead to all of us doing better. Through it all.
Of Blue Shield of Illinois, a division of Healthcare Service Corporation, a mutual legal reserve company.
It takes four essential ingredients to brew Bud Light: barley, rice, water, and hops. But this is a 30-second commercial, so here's the sound of barley malting. It's super quiet. Sorry. Here's to the beer you can always count on. Brewed to be America's favorite light lager. Bud Light, famous among friends. Enjoy responsibly. Bud Light Beer, AB, St. Louis, Missouri.
The Blackhawks Conversation. We've got it for you tomorrow morning. The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Scott Blackhawks Hockey is sponsored by the Gary Lang Auto Group. If it doesn't say Gary Lang on the back, you probably paid too much. Tom Eidman, Troy Murray at American Airlines Arena. After a solid first period, Blackhawks have struggled here in the second period. Stars have put two on the board.
Yeah.
Blackhawks have yet to register a shot here in the second period. Second period has been their worst period all season long, and Joe Quenneville kind of addressed that a little bit earlier this week. And don't know why, but we got to improve that middle frame. Oh, off to the right-hand side of Ben Bishop. It's the four-season leading air conditioning and plumbing face-off for all the right reasons. Four seasons.
Well, Lance Bowman's brought a little bit of an edge to this game.
But I don't mind. Joe Quenneville puts his fourth line right back out. Off the face-off, it ends up in the left-wing corner. Wingo's tried to center. This is bad into the left point to Keith. Wingo's top of the left circle. Snaps the shot into the shin pads of Sagan. Luck tumbles into the left-wing corner. Hayden battling there with John. Got it to Wingo's along the left board. To Keith, left point. He sends a wrist shot in on goal. Six save made by Bishop. This puck to the far board. Janmark clears to center ice. Hayden slaps it off the right boards into the Stars end. Quick clearing attempt by Honka to second at center ice. And ahead to Johns in front of the penalty boxes, and he'll drive it down the right boards in behind the Hawk net. Crawford stopping it back there for Michael Kempney. Kempney passing on the left wing to Keith. Pass up the right wing to Scott. He had to wait for it. The Stars line lost it, then took it away from John. Steps in over the Stars line to the right wing. Cuts back in the high slot. Lost the puck. Stars get it back. Klingberg passing to Ben. To Radulov over the Hawk line down the right wing. Given a shoulder by Panic, but then Radulov out of the front and fires off the crossbar. Klingberg clears the puck out over the...
Barbara and Irwin come. I don't know about it, I guess.